Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, greetings and welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Let me apologize again today, not due to my fault, but we're having an issue with our live stream with Facebook, sending out a message right now to our members who've been following us and our regular callers. You listen to Talk Straight, and this is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, as we announced earlier. And we'd love to have you join us tonight. So give me a call at 657-383-0944. I'm typing as I talk, you know. But we'd love for you to join us here and be a part of this dialogue. Unfortunately, again, we are having issue with our Facebook, our live streaming for some reason or another. I'm not sure why, but we are. So, but anyway, feel free to give us a call here, 657-383-0944. We'll be here for another about hour and 25 minutes or so in dialogue. We do have a topic for this evening. So we want you to feel free to join us, 657-383-0944. Call right in here and share with us, and we'll be happy to engage you. All right, give me one second. I am sending a message to our Facebook group that they can join us via phone call. All right. All right. We appreciate your patience there. Just sending out a message to everyone to get in touch with us here via the podcast platform. And that's at blogtalkradio.com/BFC Institute. That's blogtalkradio.com/BFC Institute. All right, that being said, we'll get right into our monologue here. And we welcome you to call us again. That number to call into the show live tonight. It's 657-383-0944, and then we can get you right on in here. All right, I think we've properly made announcements and shared it with everybody that need to know that we're having some technical difficulties with our live stream for whatever reason. This is has happened before. I'm not really sure what the issue is, but right now we're not going to deal with it. This is September 14th, 2021. Almost half of the month is gone. Let's see, by tomorrow, half of the month will be gone, right? September 15th. And time is steadily winding up. Now, here's the catch. We're still here, by the grace of God. We're still here. And we have an opportunity to improve ourselves where we need to, sustain ourselves in the good places that we've been, and to share the good information that we have, right? In this present arena of social service, basically, it's often assumed that the purpose of offering support to people in our society, in our neighborhoods, in our community, is to shape their thought and behavior into compliance with a specific group's expectations for them. That could be a political group, some social group, some religious group. Now, this does not lead to independence nor self-will, but rather social compliance. So the aim of support should not be social compliance, but it should be geared toward empowering individuals to stand on their own two feet, to move in their own path on their own courses in life. That's what it should do. Join me tonight as I talk from the topic, the nature of support, the nature of support. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to focus my attention largely on three different things that, or areas where support are necessary and particularly needed with regards to addressing urban America. Somebody may still be arguing, why you just got to focus on urban America? That's my job. That's what I do. All right? That's what I came for. That's what I'm here for. I live for that opportunity. Maybe one day when I close my eyes, I will have died in service of doing the same thing. Nonetheless, but that's what we're here for. So I want you to join me, 657-383-0944, on this September 14th, 2021. And our topic is the nature of support. There are about three areas that we want to look at here. And I'd like for you to join me as we discuss those three areas and give your feedback there. And let's see if we can come up with something that's useful. Now, what drove this discussion, this topic tonight, Dr. Lee? Well, you know, we have been talking quite a bit in the past, in the most recent past, about what is it going to take to bring our babies up to speed academically, right? And to give them a good, strong, healthy footing in life, so such that socially they will be adjusted and be able to stand on their own and not have to rely on anyone else long term. That's kind of related to what we're talking about, support. And so we talked about who is it that we should be focusing our attention, our resources on, and who should we be teaching in the process. Take a little teaching on a lot of different levels, okay? And that's why we're having this discussion, the nature of support. I believe it's important to understand what support ought to do if it's going to be effective. Now, if an individual say they want to support you, want to help you, and they're not They have their own agenda, clearly. They're helping themselves. They're using you as an opportunity to help themselves. In what way, Doctor? Well, to reach and meet their own agenda. So let's look at the text for tonight, found in Acts, the 20th chapter, verses 33 and through 35. That's what we want to look at tonight. We want to look at the text in Acts 20, verse 33 through 35. There is something very instructive here. Let's consider it. 33 says, I have coveted no man's silver or gold or apparel. 34 says, yea, ye yourselves know that these hands have ministered unto my necessities and to them that were with me. 35 says, I have showed you all things, how that so laboring ye ought to support the weak, and remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. Powerful messenger. Powerful messenger. Takeaways. This is the Apostle Paul speaking here. And what he is making very clear is, in all that he did in efforts to help people find salvation, eternal life, through Christ, didn't make no money off of it. He didn't try to take nobody's silver, their gold, or clothes, or none of that. He wasn't trying to get rich. He was doing it because he had a genuine care for people. Are y'all with me? Stay with me now. Stay with me. Stay with me. Now, the other point here is in 34, he says, y'all know, you've been watching me. And you've seen that I'm not walking around making money to dress like a flashy cat, you know what I mean, like a pop star, like a rock star. No. I only take care of the basic things that I need. That's all I've done. Are y'all walking with me? Then he goes on in verse 35 to say, to make the pivotal point. And perhaps this is the foundation to our discussion this evening. I've showed you all things, how that when, I'm paraphrasing the text here, laboring, you ought to make yourself available to supporting those who have nothing, that are weak, that are the lowly. You understand? And to remember the words of the Savior, how he said it is blessed to give, more blessed to give than receive. In other words, you say you've come in to support somebody. You can't be on no hustle. You mean, doctor? In a position to where you are there to take advantage and exploit their weakness. You know they're in a tough spot. You know they can't hardly make it. So you're going to use your knowledge, your experience, your expertise. Listen, y'all. Basically, to make them dependent on you. My. Put them in a position where they can't make it without you. And there are some people who are not willing to do anything for you if you don't verbally commit that you're going to give them praise or that they can see some benefit from whatever they're giving, whatever they're offering. Now, is that support? Is that what support is? If it is, keep it. I don't need it. Huh? If my being friends with you, I have to give up my integrity, my right to self development and independence, right? I can't be your friend without that. Well, guess what? I don't need your friendship. Keep it. Keep it to yourself. Because I don't need it. You understand what I'm saying? It ain't no good to me. And so that's why tonight we're speaking from this topic, the nature of support. What is support all about? And in relationship to that, I want to speak from those three subtopics: support and education. That's one of the things we've been talking about. Our children need a good, strong basis of learning, instruction. With that, as they grow older, when they become of the age of responsibility and dependence, they will be able to fend for themselves. They won't have to rob. They won't have to steal. They won't have to kill nobody. Right? And the more of them that are in that position, the less of them have to turn to crime. Are y'all with me? Yeah. They won't have to turn to crime. They won't have to resort to those menial needs that cause them to become desperate. You understand what I'm saying? And they won't ever find themselves in a position where they're at the mercy of anybody. Now, we all need the mercy of the Almighty, O Elohim, the Lord God. But they won't have to be at the mercy of anyone. So, again, that is really what we're looking at when we talk about the focus on education. Then the second thing is related. Economics. Now, let me say something. It's not just young people that need this, beloved. There's some great grown folks. Musty rascals, male and female, who need to learn the lesson about economic independence, self-sufficiency. It is possible in the United States of America to achieve that. Y'all hear me? I said it's possible in the United States of America to achieve self-sufficiency and economic independence. Why is it so important, Doctor? Well, when you control your finances and the resources that provide for your quality of life, you can dictate how you live, where you go. Are you with me? What you will and will not take. That's how it works in this capitalistic society we call America. Some people don't like that. They don't like the reality that we're in a capitalistic society. Oh, well, get over it. Welcome to America. I ain't put it like that, but that's just the way it is. Now you go to some other country, and you'll find that they have their own ways and methods, means of operating and getting down. Here in the United States of America, though, if you want to find yourself in a position to where you can be self-sufficient and independent in your lifestyle without having to depend on the government, some social service agency, or anybody else to provide for you, guess what? You can have that. You can have that. And at the end of the day, if you position yourself appropriately, you and your children can benefit from the same thing. Are y'all with me? Now, I see we got a call on the line. We'll come to you. Let me finish this monologue here. Then the last thing is theology. Uh-oh, I'm meddling now, ain't I? Theology. Let me tell y'all something. You sit around and hear the average person talking about going to heaven, and they full of hell. Uh-oh, say it again, doctor. Everybody always talking about going to heaven, and they full of hell. The other things, they always talking about going to heaven, but they're afraid to die, to give up this old carnal man and to be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye. What you mean, Duffy? I'm saying that particular set of economic, social, and even political challenges that face many urban American neighborhoods and communities, there is a need for a proactive, relevant theology, belief system that will bring them out of the doldrums of despair and into the bright light of success and happiness in the United States of America. Yes, our theological basis is off. In other words, it ought to drive our actions, our behaviors. So what's driving this foolishness of divisiveness? Part of it has to do with the conditioning of individuals to be engaged in a division in various groups that have a particular spin on how you get to heaven or how you avoid hell, if you will. And guess what? How you think you're going to see the Father and tell him how much you love him when you can't love your brother who you see every day? Uh-oh. Y'all see what I'm saying? Nah, I'm getting to it. Education. I told you earlier in previous episodes that education is a process. It's a process by which teaching and learning takes place. Naturally, it requires a teacher, someone who is aware and adept in a certain base of knowledge and who is capable of transferring that information, that knowledge, to a student, one who is there to learn, to absorb, and to take in this information. That's what education is. Now, what's important to understand about the process of teaching and learning is you have to determine what is it, what they call the curriculum, is going to be. What are you going to be teaching? What's your aim for teaching what to the student? That's a big question that, if you ask me, parents and children alike should ask and have answered in their lives. This is going to help us get rid of some of the foolishness now. All over America, not just one city, all of them. They face the same set of problems, and it's amazing that it looked like the same thing, the same silly, destructive, backwards behaviors are being repeated in every city that we see these issues prevalent. See? So education must be geared toward empowering people, you understand, to know what it takes to identify themselves and what their purpose is and give them a sense of direction for what they'll be doing. See, some people don't like a lot of things about America, rightfully so. That's just America's 245-some-year history now. It was involved in some pretty ugly, nasty things. No question about that. That being said, there are some positive things that we can take away. There are some opportunities here in America for American citizens that you can benefit from. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not trying to say that they're improper or haven't been problems. I'm telling you that through the process of teaching and learning the right thing, a positive change can be made. All right? Then when it comes to economics, we listened to some of the words and teachings of Dr. Claude Anderson, a well-known sociologist and historian and economist, and he rightly pointed out, doesn't make it right because he said it, but his experience was absolutely shown in his instruction. And I would argue that this is some instruction that will be helpful in urban America. All right? So what he laid out is the need for the group that we call Black, Negro, Colored, or African American to be unified in their process of developing economic structure and opportunities for not just one or a handful of individuals, but for everybody that make up that community. But that requires us to be unified, to be consistent, and to be on the same sheet of music about what we're doing and where we're going. Economics is going to be a good basis of support. If you're not helping them develop themselves economically, you're not helping them at all. Leave them alone. Just leave them alone. Somebody say leave them alone. If you're not addressing the need for the right instruction, curricular focus for urban America improvement, leave them alone. You understand what I'm saying? Lastly, I'm talking to me and the preachers now. Here's the big thing right here. There are a lot of people who don't take time to study the scriptures. They don't look at language. They don't look at anthropology. They don't look at theology or divinity or none of those things. But what they are accustomed to doing is relying on others who have dedicated a good portion of their life or all their life to those studies, to those findings, you see. And accordingly, they trust that the preacher, the pastor, perhaps the imam, is going to tell them the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. One of the things, sadly, that has been witnessed, certainly within the last generation, 30 years or better, it's a falling away and a lack of trust and confidence in those traditional religious teachings and institutions, by and large. I'm not speaking of any one in particular, but overall. Now, this is not just a problem for African Americans. It's the same thing applies with other ethnicities, particularly white. Young people of a certain generation are looking for answers that are based in reality and not necessarily some sort of spiritual theory, something that's tangible that they can identify with, they can wrap their minds around, you see. That's what they're looking for. And if I, as a pastor, in this present moment, I talked about at the beginning, the social service arena right now is very interesting, because there are many people who think what it's all about is controlling people and shaping people's minds, basically, to do like others want them to do. Wrong answer. You understand what I'm saying? You literally got to be blind, crippled, and crazy to get certain services and what have you in order for you to qualify, quote unquote. And what I'm saying is that the theology that we've had has to let folk know that at the end of the day, God himself, My. The Lord God himself wants you to get off your tail and do something for yourself. Not make excuses. Not always crying. Not always looking for others. But you get up yourself. Well, if you don't know how, that's where the educational process comes in. See? Teaching and learning. Teaching and learning what? How to do for yourself. And when you do that, it'll position you economically to be independent. Yeah, that's my monologue. I've asked the late, great Bobby Womack to help me out, and he going to do that posthumously. And listen to what he said. A very powerful hit, I believe, back in the 70s or so, where he discussed this issue of support and help of people, right? And there has to be a line that is drawn at some point. If you're going to help someone, there has to be an end game for you and for them. In other words, at some point I'm going to stop. I'm not helping you anymore. I'm not supporting you anymore if I'm doing it for you. If I've taken over, I've occupied your life, your quality of life. I'm not helping you no more. What I've done is taken over. Listen to what Bobby said. Listen to what Brother Womack said. Come on, Bobby.
Everybody claims that they want the best things in life. But not everyone wants to go. This particular fellow walks around all day long saying, shine. Carry your bed. Life will keep you chill. Life's on bugging. Only thing she's got to be. Never
But guess what?
But I can't help him much.
You gotta get up. You got to get up.
You're listening to Talk Straight, and tonight Bob is helping us intimate the thought, the nature of support. It's not about encouraging man or woman to stay down or to be reliant on others, but to find the way to position themselves to do for themselves. We go straight to the phone lines. We had a caller, but he left, but we got 4,600. Good friends out of St. Louis, Missouri, by way of America somewhere. Welcome, sir, to the discussion tonight.
Hey, Ruben, how you doing?
We're maintaining, sir, holding it in the road. That's about it.
I don't know why when black people is asked the question, how you doing? Well, I'm struggling. I'm surviving. I'm on the front line. I'm out here trying to wake up my people. We're maintaining.
Okay. So you don't understand that, huh?
I really don't. I mean, it seems like that is a popular report, status report of their life. It seemed like they would try to change it. If they're not, they must like it, right?
No, not necessarily. I don't think so. You can put me in that camp, St. Louis, of people, individuals, and I can't speak for everybody, who would cautiously, because I know that things could be better, right? And not so much for me personally, St. Louis, as it is in general. You know, you look around, man, and you see the way, see the plight that things are in your neighborhood, in your community, in your city. And I know I got a bleeding heart. Just gonna say I got a bleeding heart. And I like to see things better. So I say all the time, I'm one of those say, well, you know, I'm maintaining. You're taking it one day at a time. See what I mean?
Well, I couldn't
now.
Relate to that. I like to plan and make them come to terms. But, you know, another thing that gets on my nerves, too, is I listen to people always trying to act as if blacks are someone that's exclusive in their life's experience. One woman was talking mm-hmm. about, well, yeah, you know, they would come to the town square and watch blacks be hung. Okay. Well, people came to the town square to watch whites be hung, too.
Okay.
And one thing that gives you, look at them Clint Eastwood's pictures. Hang them high. There wasn't blacks up there on the gallows, was it?
No, not in Clint Eastwood's movies, no. That's right.
No, it wasn't. And because it's a replication of what went on in life, it wasn't blacks out there in the West, gunslingers, robbing banks and stuff like that, that the people in the posse would gather and they would hang them.
Okay.
So you got people that try to keep things going and using examples of blacks against them when actually it was human beings. It was human beings doing these things. And they did them wherever human beings gathered. It was always something that if you look onto them today, look back on them today, but that was society norms. And you can't go back and change society norms because today you have things going on in society that people of that time would look upon and say, man, that is terrible. Men marrying men.
Got you. So my dad told me about the rest of his soul, a phrase that was very common in Mississippi anyway, and I heard others say this was common in other parts of the South, and that was that the times were so bad, not only because of Jim Crow actions that allowed government officials basically to use their position of authority to hamstring and to control and manipulate and force, particularly African Americans into certain situations. But he said that if you found favor with a landowner or someone who controlled the plantation or what have you, they call him Mr. Charlie. That Mr. Charlie would say that I like you, and they would actually go down to the jail and get you out of St. Louis jail. They tell the sheriff, I need that boy to work for me. And they would say to him that if you keep yourself out of the grave, in other words, if you don't die from black-on-black crime, I'll keep you out of jail. As long as you do good
well, they
enough,
do it.
Not to keep yourself, I'll get you out of jail.
They do it today, too.
Yeah.
It happens today, too. Whites bail blacks out of jail?
I was speaking to your point earlier.
Whites bail blacks out of jail today in 2021? What are they called?
Kamala Harris, George Soros, and others did it this past last summer. They bailed them out. And they were
and before that, it was called bail bondsmen.
Well, okay. There's a system in the criminal justice system that does allow you to pay any fee or bail that you might have to. You know, and we're not really getting into that, but my point is that there's a certain shared experience, sir, that people have a tendency to speak of, and I agree with you. There's a certain generation who's worked hard, kind of what we're talking about. What did support look like for them? Was it somebody giving them everything they want? Or just an encouragement for them to seek out opportunities, create them when they didn't exist, and to work for themselves. Is that what do you think support is?
Well, I can tell you about some supports. Let's stick on blacks. Students, when they go to private institution, colleges and universities, they are spotted 310 points on the SAT before they even start taking the test. Hispanics are spotted by 270 points or somewhere around there. And Asians are deducted about 140 points.
I don't mean to be rude, but help us understand what you mean by spotted. Explain that to our general audience. When you say they're spotted, what do you mean?
Before you start taking the test, you already got 310 points.
So why is that? Where does that come from? You're saying that this is a practice for those who provide the standardized test, ACT, SAT. That's what I'm saying.
In private institutions. Because they say blacks say they have been disadvantaged.
Okay. And there's some truth to that, that there have been challenges. I think you know that. Now, I'm not sure that that's the case today, though. There are more opportunities. And when we talk about support, we can really look at what does that look like. Three things that we're focusing on tonight is education, economic stability, and even our theological basis, right? How can we prepare ourselves, empower ourselves to do for ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
And if someone wants to support that, right, does that support look like?
You said that there's some truth to that. What about the Asians? They start off with a negative because they're so smart.
Not that they're smart. There are variables that colleges and universities take into account, right? They not only ask for your grades, but oftentimes they ask for work experience. They ask for volunteer work that you've done. All of that is a compilation, and oftentimes they ask you to do an essay. Many colleges ask you to write an essay for entry, right? All of those that's a good view for the professors and, you know, the dean and everyone else to assess what contribution you can make to the classroom and to the learning experience. Does that make sense?
Well, we're talking about the test. All that other is additional. We're talking about when you sit down and the clock starts and you start taking that test on the subject matter that it has, your math, science, writing, I guess reading is in there too. I'm not sure on the SAT. The Asian is so smart that they have to have, that they deduct from them. If not, they would run away with it. Now, blacks.
I'm not saying what you mean, but go ahead. I'm listening to you.
Well, if you get 10, if you got 20 questions, and everybody else got 20 questions, okay, the Asian would start off with a negative 14. If you got 1,000 questions, they start off with a negative 140, whereas blacks start off with a positive 310, as if they got 310 questions out of the thousands correct on their own. And even after that, they still have the lowest score averages compared to whites, Asians, and Hispanics.
That's been a historical fact for some time, by overall. But I would argue that, and first of all, let me recognize 8112. Welcome, 8112. We're talking about the nature of support tonight. Someone want to help you. They say they want to help you. What does that look like? That's really what we're discussing. Welcome to our discussion tonight. Feel free to jump
now,
in.
Now, the Nigerians don't have that problem. They black. Matter of fact, they outscore Asians.
Anyway, thank you.
Now, all right. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. St. Louis, I was going to respond and say that I believe that probably the biggest variable is the social orientation to learning when they go to take a standardized test. Asians
who controls that?
Have, well, their families, their cultures.
There
let
you
me,
go.
Let me finish the point. They're not the only ones that come and do well in regards to specifically in areas of the sciences and math and so forth. And that's because of the orient to learning and instruction. That's one of the things I was talking about, teaching and learning. What is it that you're teaching? What are you learning? And so that's
well, they all taking the same test. There's not no different tests. And plus,
it's about how prepared you are for that test.
Yeah, in the preparation, you have what do you call that? I can't think of the name of it. You have practice tests. They're all the same. Asians have the same as the Nigerians. Nigerians have the same as the Hispanics. Blacks have the same as the whites. And whites are everybody else.
Okay. No doubt. And the point here is that it's the – and that's one of the focuses there. If we're going to say that we're going to provide money and resources to remediate or help particularly urban American students that historically are not doing very well in math and reading and science, then what is it that we're going to do different than what we have been doing? Because a lot of money has been spent already. And we see that, unfortunately, when you look at the national test scores, some is not adding up. We're going by.
Well, let's talk about resources. The tests are free.
Give me one.
You can do 12 tests before you graduate from high school. 12 practice tests.
Don't take that back.
They may be $50. They may be $50, but the practice test that you can do in preparing for the test, you got organizations that do that for free.
All right. Saint Louis, making a good point. If you don't mind, let me recognize Don out of Selma. Welcome, Don. We're talking from the top.
How y'all doing this afternoon? Mr. Dockery, I'm in a house we're developing right now. Selma.
Okay. I got you. I'm going to come back to you. I just wanted to – I called St. Louis so I can bring you in. We got 8112 out of Peoria with us now. But thank you, guys.
Let's see how Peoria is doing.
Okay. Well, she's on the line, and we welcome her to jump in. You doing okay, Peoria? Okay. All right. But you were making
a good point, though. Wait a minute. What did I tell you earlier?
She's doing all right.
She says she's hanging in there.
Me too. We all are, St. Louis. Maybe you're not. Maybe you don't have to hang in there. You got it going on, man. Real strong. So you ain't got to do that. But some of us, we have to, you know what I mean? We have to manage our
business. I didn't say I was hanging upside down, sir. I said I'm hanging in there, and that's just what
okay.
I'm doing.
Okay.
No, I
me
want
too.
Who is on their medicine?
I'm sorry, say that again. Well,
I said I wasn't talking about you, Pastor. St. Louis on there, Medlin.
Oh, yeah, he'll be all right. He'll be all right. I'd like to bring him back, though, to the conversation about a relevant conversation with the testing and what have you. Yes, there are resources out there. Yeah, absolutely. But if an individual, St. Louis, is not orientated to valuing that and not only taking advantage of those, but there are free resources at libraries, right? And there are other places that provide things that can help you for standardized tests and so forth. So, yeah, they're out there, but if you don't go get them, they're not going to come to you. And John,
yeah, I was getting ready to mention libraries. Yes, you're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
library, books, all sorts of things.
Correct. It's not that they don't exist. That's not the issue. As it is that the people that oftentimes these things are allocated for whatever reason, don't take advantage of them. And a lot of times they leave them when they don't use them. All right. Let me go to Don. Don, go ahead, brother. I cut you off earlier. How are you doing?
Yeah,
you
Mr. Doctor, I'm in a piece of property right now, and I'm moving,
okay.
What you call right now, the quarter round. Some young European guys came in this evening with a couple of pickup trucks and some painting equipment. And I asked him, I looked at him,
okay.
I said, how much that spray up cost? He said, $1,300. Man, they came in, did three big rooms, the dining room, they painted the whole house with the spray up, trimmed it out, and guess what? They're gone. Got the money
yeah.
gone.
Yeah.
Brothers,
yeah.
I don't understand, brothers. I really don't understand. I'm 61. I'm trying to pay through it now. I don't
okay.
quite understand where you can't go get equipment and come in and do work and go out the door.
All right.
You got the hee-haw
okay,
and play all the time. I don't get it, Mr. Doctor. You get some good
right.
old boys
okay.
out of the country, get them some equipment, come in and work,
right.
and go.
Well, can I say
mm-hmm.
something, Don? Don, may I say something? The National Chamber of Commerce has reported that the number one reason that certain businesses, particularly minorities, are not able to get contracts or maintain them is because they're underprepared. What does that mean? When they do the bidding, they oftentimes either
mm-hmm.
low bid themselves or overbid, or they cannot get the materials to do the job within a specified time. Now, when you are positioned economically, Don, to where you can go and you can have all the equipment, those spray guns, those air guns. My dad used to do that type of stuff. He used to paint. And you're right. That pump allow you to get in. You put your trim work up, Don, right? And you put
mm-hmm.
your paper down or your plastic down. And once you spray that joker, you in and out of there, man. You ain't playing with that thing. But what happens is a lot of times when you just got to come there with a paintbrush and a roller, you be there 2 or 3 days, man.
That's right.
And who wants you to take? Who wants the job to take that long, Don? But you see the challenge there, brother?
Yeah, but I seen it today. And listen, Ms. Doctor, I want to say this too. Our leadership, I don't even want to see them no more, Doc. And Mr. Doctor, the reason I say that is because, listen, Ms. Doctor, guess what the property we own? You understand the historical property that we own? Right now, the house that's, okay, this house I'm in was owned by Lewis Brothers, which is the funeral director. Well, the house up on Franklin was owned by Christopherson. He bought that place. I don't know what happened
okay.
to Christopherson's family. They was there. But listen who Christopherson was. Christopherson's family
okay.
owned a cotton gin on Jeff Davis, which is now J.L. Chestnut. That cotton
okay.
gin was tied into Alabama Pennies and Savings Bank that came out of Selma University. Up under W.R. Pettiford, who was a protege to Booker T. Washington.
Okay.
What happened?
All right.
I want to know what happened.
Well.
Now, listen, Mr. Doctor. You done let the cat out of the bag. They got the HBCU money at Selma University. But guess what? You have no economic department named after Pettiford. The man that laid the foundation. Because you too busy stealing money, putting it in your pocket. And you can't say nothing to Trump because you went and got the money.
Okay. All right, so Don.
But then you want to run up in the pulpit and tell me something.
You know
about
what you write about there, Don. Trump did give them money. Sure did. I forgot about
that. I know he
that.
Did. But Mr. Darker,
he gave it to him. He gave it to him over a 10-year period so they wouldn't have to go back every year and beg. He gave $100 million or something like that. That was over a 10-year period. Say every year for 10 years, this is here for you.
Now listen to this. And since we've been talking on the radio program, I was working over the raceway. So a dude came over riding the bicycle. They heard me talking, and the dude kept sitting the bicycle. I'm like, why are you sitting the bicycle? He came to Collins Petway. I had jumped on Collins about. I said, I knew y'all went and got the HBCU, and Collins took off in the car. I jumped on him on Sinison Parkway. He's the attorney for the school. His daddy sits on the board of directors or the trustees. So Collins took off in the car. Well, I went and apologized to him. Never said nothing to him. Well, his cousin came over to Raceway, set his bicycle down front. I kept seeing the dude set the bicycle down there. So right across the street from Raceway, we met in Washington. You know what he told me? He took the money and went and bought 8 houses.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Now, and listen, well, Mr. Doctor, I got to come at you again. Today in this house, I'm cleaning up. Yesterday I was in the house cleaning up. This Lewis brother. This Lewis brother funeral home, I got up this morning and went looking for it. It's right behind the new Catholic gym they done built on Broad Street, which was built by Stewart Construction. And you got to watch that in Selma, too. Well, Lewis brother sat behind it. I found a book in here. The book I found in here hooks into what my cousin Milton said. The book is on, guess what it's on? Tennessee Waterway.
Okay.
That's what they've been doing.
Well,
you run and throw the toys in your own damn folk.
Okay, oh, easy, Don, easy.
But you run around here with badges and gun on and claim your FBI and you're poisoning your own damn people.
Okay.
Now the United States, let's talk about it. You're poisoning your own people now.
I hate. Let me jump in here for a second. So you laid out a lot of things that sound like it had a historical basis to it, okay? And I would argue with you today that there's at least 2 generations that is far removed from what you're talking about. Just down there in Selma. We just took Selma. There are at least 2 generations, and perhaps 2.5, who don't have a clue of any of those individuals' names that you named, going all the way back to Booker T. Washington. Now, why is that? As you started out saying, there is poor leadership. I would argue that when it comes to educating young folk in areas like that, that it's important that what you teach, and I told you, education is about a process. The question is, what are you teaching them? And what do you expect them to learn, right? It would have been helpful if they knew about what you're talking about, Don. You understand what I'm saying?
Well,
I'm familiar with what you're saying, but guess who would benefit most from that? That population. You see, this is all over America. All over America. There are a lot of young people with talent, with skill that is untapped. And perhaps if they were connected and familiar with these role models, these historical examples of success, they would emulate some of that. So that's our challenge.
Well, Jocket,
that's your and my challenge. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
You said there's poor leadership.
Yeah, unfortunately. Unfortunately.
Poor leadership, like leadership doing nothing, right?
That's it.
No,
Wait a minute.
Leadership doing nothing because people ain't asking them to do anything.
Okay.
That's why they
okay.
doing nothing.
All right. I can't argue with you there either.
You got a car out there in the parking lot. You can look at that car all day long. But until you get in that car and put a key in the ignition to turn it, start it up, make sure it's got gas. It ain't going to do nothing.
There you go. You got to make sure it works, though, too, St. Louis. Because you can put the key in ignition.
Well, you should have made that assurance when you voted for them. Now they in there.
Well, so that point is well taken.
If you ain't telling them what you want done, they ain't going to do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to sit there like a bump on a log.
Listen to this. What he's saying. Listen to this. I called Mr. Bailey, who used to teach political science at Alabama State. He wrote a book called Scallywag and Carpetbagger. It shows the maps and stuff in the second edition of his book. show the congressional maps how they used to be from Reconstruction to now. I called him the other day and I said, Mr. Bailey, how do you address the school system when the school system is not educating a child? He explained it to me. I didn't know that. He said that the representative that's in the district that you live in, you tell them to go to tell the school system what to teach the child. And guess what? Guess what I've noticed here in Dallas County since I've been down here 12 years? When I was in the good old boy system right up here in Dixon County, all right, we integrated schools. From 10th grade to the 12th grade, they would take the young boy out on the, get the school bus, leave the high school, we go out on the construction site where they're building a house and teach the young boys how to build a house. I've been down here 12 years in Dallas County. You got four predominantly African-American high schools down here. Nobody taking them to build nothing.
Well, I hear what you're saying, Big Brother. And we've heard you say that before. And I'll go back to what my reply has been every time you said that. That's on the honest for ensuring that whatever you think is important for them to learn is on those individuals who are stakeholders in that individual community or that neighborhood. He's right.
And who are the stakeholders?
Well, the citizens, the voters, people who pay.
There you go. It's the parents first. Because you, a citizen, don't have no kids in the district, can't tell the district how to teach somebody else's kids unless that's approved by those parents. So that's supposed to fall on the shoulders, that responsibility, on the parents of the district. They supposed to give the district and tell them this is what we want, the concentration for our children, the direction we want them to go.
So that would be a very good thing, gentlemen. In an ideal world, Don, St. Louis, that would be wonderful. Unfortunately, in the real world in which we live, someone has to take the lead in making these basic things that some many people take for granted, making it known. You hear people say they won't give us, they won't let us have, they've taken away, but you have the right and the power to do for yourself. And that's not, what does support look like? What is the nature? You understand what I'm saying? If I'm a pastor, 12, what should I be? What should you reasonably expect from me in terms of supporting you with whatever I'm teaching theologically from the Bible? What should it do for you in enriching your life? You feel like we're in there on that 12?
Yeah, I guess a little bit. I expect the pastor I'm speaking to give me that understanding that I need. Because if I'm coming to him or her, it's for a reason. Hold on a second, please.
Okay. But while she goes away, John, that makes a lot of sense. One of the reasons we rely on pastors is because they have typically a basis of training. They ideally have studied and are aware and familiar with texts and scriptures that are geared toward bringing that fullness of understanding and helping people identify and shape their faith. So that makes sense, Don. What do you think about that? Until she'll come back with us here shortly. What do you think about that, Don?
Think about what were you
there?
Huh? Yes, I'm here.
She was making. Fiore was making the point that she expects the pastor to be able to fully inform her about things about her faith and things that's going to help her enrich her life. I'm asking you, what do you say to that?
I certainly agree with her because the first scripture I ever learned that really was good to my spirit was the passage I always looked in the Bible was, and my cousin died yesterday. He'd been dead 6 years, and I used to tell him all the time, I said, our people die because of a lack of knowledge.
Okay.
And that's what's going on. Our people don't have the knowledge.
Okay.
And the knowledge that's in the Bible, the preachers don't share that knowledge. The preachers are getting paid by the big boys not to take care of you. The Bible start off with health.
Okay.
Well, I tell you what I think about that.
Okay, I'm coming to you, St. Louis. Go ahead. What's your thoughts?
I ain't looking for no preacher to tell me nothing about making my life better. Okay. Because if he knew, he wouldn't be there himself.
What you mean by that? What you mean if he
I'm
knew?
I'm saying
he
if
there?
He knew, he wouldn't be there in there trying to. And what he's talking about is not talking about no economic values. He's talking about something after you die. That nobody has ever died and sent you a text message back to tell you how it was.
That's right. And so, we were talking to this. I was talking to your lady.
First of all, excuse you. Now I will say something. You are so rude. Because no one down, you being an atheist, so what would you know about what the preacher talking about? Not one darn thing, because you don't believe in God, so you say, I don't know you from nope, the man on the moon. But that's...
Hey, Don.
Yeah, Don.
Isn't it funny how... Isn't it funny, Don, how you can talk about the things you do, the negative things and so forth, and nobody comes behind you and criticizes you like they
do
me? Is that jealousy?
I got a loud spirit and a very loud voice. I didn't interrupt you, and you won't treat me with all due respect, sir.
Well, Peora, here's the thing. I don't know why you criticizing me anyway. It don't do
you
any good. You saying that I'm rude. You say I'm rude and others say I'm marvelous.
I don't know who the hell, excuse me. I don't know who told you that.
Well, I do.
And some people were, I'm sure you probably are marvelous. But you try to downgrade other people that you think is beneath you. You are beneath yourself because for your intelligence to be so high level is mighty low, sir.
Well, that's your opinion. But like you said, others say, I don't know why you jump, why you mentioned me in your conversation. You formed your conversation.
I wasn't talking.
Well, first place, I was talking to the Reverend.
Sir,
and you well, no, let me talk because you mentioned my name. First place, I was talking to Reuben. I answered Reuben's question. Then you didn't like what I said. It just irritates you. You just sitting there itching. Then you come in and call me rude. You ain't supposed to call me rude. I wasn't talking to you.
Okay. So now let's talk about support. Let's talk about support. How about that? Let's talk about support. And let's talk about support by way of learning, teaching and learning, about economic stability, and let's talk about theology. Now, thank you all for that engagement, that dialogue. Here's the thing. And I was asking that question to Peora, and she had to step away for a second. And Peora, I would like to give you an opportunity to finish what you were saying about your expectations for a pastor, what you expect for them to do for you. So if we could go back there, that would be a good place for us. And by the way, we got about another 26 minutes before we wrap up.
Okay, personally, I feel as though there are pastors working side by side with God. Some aren't, but there's a lot that are, and they're genuine.
Okay.
And they are our teachers. They're supposed to be our instructors. And when it gets to the point that you can't trust the pastor of your home church, it is a problem.
Okay.
Because one thing people fail to realize, men are human beings, but there are some men has a special gift that they have been blessed with, and women as well, through the Spirit. And I trust and hold on to that.
Okay. May I offer this for your consideration? In 2021, given the nature of the social realities that many people that belong to organized churches face, and the things that they profess as belief, there is a need for people to learn how to balance those. One of the reasons you have a lot of people leaving traditional churches, black churches and white churches, is for some of those reasons, because there is a imbalance between the reality of what they say they believe, what should be happening. In other words, you say that God is able to provide anything for you. It's reasonable to assume then that God can provide a way through the church for young people to stop shooting and killing one another, and for economic disparities and poverty to be eradicated in urban American cities. That's a reasonable expectation.
That's true. So, however, they have to go to hear the word to get the word. You don't have to go
that
in the church
true.
To receive the word. And it also has to be something that comes from within, just on the outside.
I agree with that. But do you see what I'm saying? That for pastors today, you got to have to do more than just read word for word from the Bible.
Oh, I'm not
You're
talking about word
to,
for word from the Bible, because
okay.
I know a certain pastor that knows how to reach me where I'm coming
Good.
From.
Well,
and
that's, okay.
I respect right. that, and I trust that. Not for
yes.
anyone
yes.
else to decide, you know, how much I trust.
Yes.
I take in what I need of it. And if I
sure,
need all
sure.
of it, then I'm well fed. And if I don't choose to eat all of it, then, you know, it is what it is. So, however, when you got
yeah.
all these children out here, and they don't know the word, period.
That's true.
They have not
That's
learned
true.
To trust even a pastor, because there's a lot of them out there lopsided now.
Absolutely.
Don't lie about that,
that is
either.
Right.
And it's hard
well,
for adults. I'm sorry.
Now, let me add to what you're saying, 12. Let me add, there are some chronological adults.
Yes.
They're over 21 who don't
yes.
know that.
Yes.
They're detached from that information. And when
okay.
you look at their economic condition, and I'm not saying this in a way of being negatively judgmental, but it's instructive. This is an academic discussion.
I have
when
to
you
click,
look at the,
listening, though. I have to click over. Excuse me, please.
Go right in. Go right. When you look at their status in life, their educational level of attainment, and you look at the other functions, you got to ask yourself, if you're going to support them, how can I best support them to improve and to maintain the quality of life they say they want? But the government.
Do you hear a clicking sound on the phone, Ruben?
I think, Don, is that you working? I think that may be
No,
Don,
click,
that,
click, click, click,
no, I don't
click.
Hear, I don't hear
I'm gonna hang up and call you back.
Okay, all right. So, Don, did you hear that discussion with 8112?
Yes, I certainly agree with her when she said certain people have certain spiritual gifts. There's a brother here that I ran into that at the time my dad had that, I was grappling. And I was in the backyard talking to him. And as we was talking, I looked at him, I said, "You a minister, ain't you?" He said. And he looked at me and laughed. He went in the house and got his license and came back to me. And he was a Seventh-day Adventist minister. And he would tell me about the Sabbath. He told me about the Sabbath being on a Saturday. He took me through the scripture and everything.
Okay.
See? And after he taught me that, that's when the coronavirus thing went down. I'm like, wow. I'm walking downtown Selma. All the main churches was closed. And I was
okay.
like, shut up.
Well, I mean, that's true, Don. Another thing coronavirus has done is to challenge, really, a lot of traditional practice
mm-hmm.
of worship, largely going to churches, being in there, and people being together in congregational collective worship. That has been strained now for many places. I won't say everyone because I don't know about everybody. Congregation of the church, but many of them are strained now. Many pastors are trying to get people to come back, you know. But I would argue that if that was relevant ministry, you would have to work so hard to do that. If
well,
what
I wouldn't
you're saying
say that, Pastor.
Doing, go, I'm sorry, go ahead. Say it again.
I wouldn't say that because I've heard about a lot of people attending their home church, and a lot of people were sick because they all were so close-knit, still trying to do their traditional thing. This world has changed.
I agree with that.
And,
yes,
and man has a big role to play in that at this point.
Yeah,
so, therefore, people, pastors, are human beings. They have wives. They have children. Their families need them and love them just as well as anybody else's.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
What they did in Illinois, in Peoria, or about all over Illinois, a lot of them start holding it either outside or they'll have the band playing in the church, and they'll have certain members in the church, and then the rest of them will listen from outside of their cars. They was figuring out different ways to do it. Because
that's
where a lot of people's strength come from, and encouragement to hold on.
Yes.
So I don't fault the churches for what's going on. That's just like saying, okay, when they gave all the service men syphilis, injected them with it, black ones anyway. I don't know about any other race, but however.
Okay.
And just said they were sick, and they spreading it to their families and things because they didn't know that that's what was going on. So I call it whatever they call that nuclear warfare going on. I call it genocide. They're trying to kill enough people off, and I don't know nothing about none of it. I'm just speaking my mind about it, and that's all I'm talking about. So I'm going to shut up.
No, I get your point. What I was speaking to, you know, and I've been pastor now 26 years, and my experiences have been that prior to Corona, there have been certain needs that people have had that have been met, and many people have been crying out for it. Post-Corona, now the cover's pulled as to why they wasn't getting what they needed. Now, that is not an indictment on any particular church or pastor. It's a reality, though, across America. That's the point I'm making here. I want to recognize Pastor Waller joining us here. We got about another 17 minutes. We're doing an hour and a half tonight. Pastor Waller, welcome. We're talking from
Can I ask you a question, Ruben?
Yes, give me 1 second. The nature of support. What does it look like if you say you want to support somebody? What does that look like? All right, go ahead, St. Louis, and we'll come right back to Pastor.
Well, you're familiar with the Tuskegee experiment.
Yes, sir, I am.
Well, nobody was injected with syphilis. And for some reason or another, that had become a popular narrative with some people. And it's repeated and repeated and repeated, and it's believed. You know what they say about a lie? You say it often enough and loud enough, sooner or later people take it for the truth.
Well, hold on, Fingo. Can you tell me what your understanding of the Tuskegee experiment was? If I'm not mistaken, it was the United States Navy that was working, and they used black nurses to convince black men to take a serum that was injected in them. And in reality, what was in that was the triggers for that disease. They were trying to see if they can kill this disease, so they had to have so many of them have it to try to use the vaccine or the serum that they came up with to kill it. So what did you understand?
Well, that's wrong, too. They never were they were not treated. They already had syphilis. They were not treated with penicillin. They were monitored.
Right.
You had about a total of 600. You had probably 200 and some odd that was given. The blood was taken. The other one, they was given as placebo. And they wasn't injected with no syphilis.
No, they weren't injected with it. However, the outbreak of syphilis down there in the Alabama region, that's where Tuskegee was.
Yeah, and they were not treated. You know, in the 1930s, Ruben, I don't know if you know it or not, white males was injected with malaria, actually injected with malaria.
Okay.
Did you know that?
Well, let's stick with this. I'm familiar with some of those details, but let's stick with this case study that you're making reference to, because it's what was mentioned. The reality is that someone understood that with this control group and this experimental group, some people were going to live and others were going to die. They used black nurses to convince black men to go along with the experiment. That was the problem.
Oh, yeah, they drew their blood. That's why they call it bad blood.
So that's the people you were talking about, if they had known the truth and that the black nurses would have told them the truth, they would likely not have experimented and would not likely have perished as a result of it.
Well, I don't know if the black nurses knew it or not, but what I'm saying is people are saying that white doctors put a needle in somebody's arm and injected the blacks with syphilis. That ain't the way that story went. But that's okay.
Syphilis.
That's okay.
It wasn't syphilis, but it was some serum that they concocted.
Well, but it wasn't syphilis. It wasn't syphilis.
It doesn't matter, sir. The matter
it doesn't
is
matter.
Like
it's not syphilis. That's the story. And don't, please, ma'am, don't address me. I'm talking to Ruben.
Hold on one second. One at a time. Let somebody let it go so we can keep
I'm gonna let it go.
Yeah, what I'm saying is tell the story right, but go ahead. That's all right. How you doing, Don? Mr. Wallace.
That's really not what we're talking about, though. We're talking about support. And in reality, support is factual information that's going to help people make an individual choice and decision about what they do. Pastor Wallace, welcome there. We've got about 30 minutes.
All right. All right, how's everybody doing? And I'm here to maintain out here doing some work. But I would like to say, if it's all right for me to say this, could it be that anything, however it came about, it was intentional?
When you do things intentionally,
see, when you sum it up and you don't have to pinpoint how it happened, the way it happened, why it happened, but it did happen some kind of way where it was intentional to do harm. I don't know if that was the case or not. I really don't, but it's amazing, you know, how stories get out there, and then, you know, you just, you know, be a person who desires to seek the truth, and the truth is what makes us free. And so,
right.
You know, when we take and utilize words, because words are powerful, and some people, you know, don't believe in the truth. Some people can take a lie and make it be the truth, and take the truth and make it be a lie. And you know, you got different things that's going on, and what's happening is that it's all about the choices today. I say this, and I turn it back over to you. Yesterday, I did a little flick about 31 seconds, and I usually pick up the ball. I pick the ball up, and I say I chose to pick the ball up. You know, by choice. I chose to spin the ball by choice.
Okay.
I chose to put the ball down. All those things was done by choice, you know, and I've done that intentionally. And so what I'm saying, if a person is seeking to do harm to people intentionally, they find ways and means to do it. Same thing if you're going to do good by people, which would be great to know that, hey, man, everybody's trying to do good by each other. But just so happened, 8112 says something about, you know, trying to exclude people off this earth. You know, that could have some truth to it. And you got to find ways and means to do it.
You know, what he's saying makes good sense. People intentionally done it. So the men intentionally had sex with their wives, because if you're a male and you got an STD, it's obvious. It's obvious. Now, women may not know, but it's obvious for a man. You got to have a pus coming out of your penis. It burns when you urinate, or some other discomfort. So those men knew it was something wrong with them, but they laid down with their wives.
But what
we had a case in East St. Louis, a black man by the name Boss Man McGee. He infected over 100 black women, young women, with HIV, with the AIDS.
Okay.
Somebody killed
him.
But he knew something was wrong, but he went on and infected others anyway.
So here's the driving point then of this discussion. The government was in a position of influence in such a way that they could have helped with the cure for syphilis. They could have helped all of those individuals in their experiment. But they intentionally choose to allow some of them to die from it and allow others to live. That was the problem. And that's what we're talking about support. That's one of the reasons why to this day many African Americans have little trust for the government when it comes to participating in health-related experiments and research. That's a challenge.
Well, it was an experiment. The government didn't know themselves. It was an experiment.
Again, they did.
Right?
The point is,
because you didn't know it.
Again, people trusted them, though, when they didn't know that it was an experiment. That was the issue. That was the issue.
And later on, Congress did apologize for that.
Yeah, I get it. The point here is related to the idea,
Well, I wonder if the men apologize to their wives.
That's a new point, you know. The issue is that, again, when it comes to those individuals in a position of trust where they say they're offering support, this is kind of similar to where we are today. One of the challenges with getting everybody, particularly African Americans in major cities, to participate in the booster shot and the COVID shot is that they have a lack of trust in the government because of the prior past events. It's said to be that the best indication of current behavior is past behavior. And so when we look at our government, that's our government. They have a history of doing some ugly, nasty things.
The best indication of current behavior is past behavior. And past behaviors say that the best vaccine maker is the human body itself, as it has been done through the history of mankind. But the trust, when you marry somebody, you do a vow, until death do us part. So why would you intentionally have a sexual encounter with your wife and you knew, you had to know, because of the symptom telltale that exists?
Well, now you know that there were stories you know that there were real life documentation of interviews that were done with some of those men, and they did not understand what was going on with their body. They didn't understand what syphilis was and in the effect of it. And so they didn't understand the danger that they put their wives in, let alone themselves. So, and let's keep in mind, down in Alabama, Tuskegee, Alabama, there was the literacy rate was very low then. It's low now, but it was very low then.
Well, where were the churches?
Well, again, that's a that gotta go.
Where were the churches? If you don't go to school, you go to Sunday school. And what did then? I'm sure one of them could have came up to a preacher and said, "Sir, I'd like to tell you something about me." And the preacher should have said, "Well, look, I think that you got this problem. You need to quarantine yourself from your wife.
When you get through doing that study, let us know about that. Here's the reality. You actually infer a good point, and that is it is helpful. That's why I was telling 8112 that today in 2021, the preacher needs to go a little bit further than just telling you to trust God.
In the Catholic Church, they got confessions, Reuben. They got confessions. You on one side, the priest on the other. And you tell the priest what your problem is.
I've heard of that.
Then the black church should have had something like that if they wanted to keep the anonymity, which really people came out and found out anyway. But if they don't have the education from a formal standpoint, then you're supposed to trust your preacher who is a representative of God.
Reasonably.
In the flesh.
That's a reasonable expectation, I think. You know? And I'm careful myself. I'm very careful myself when addressing people's personal issues, their social issues, and emotional issues to make sure that I make it clear that there's some things that I may be able to help address. There are others we need to refer to individuals who are better trained than I am. See what I mean? Because I don't want to...
Right. If you can advise them to seek help here or there or here. But what I'm saying is that there's no... See, today we can sit back and blame the government, blame the white man. But it's more... you had other safeguards and checks within those communities, one being the black church, since they didn't have a formal education, they go to Sunday school, to church all the time. That church is given a operating position, which is granted to them by the government, our agency of the government, that being the U.S. Treasury, our Internal Revenue Service, in order to get their tax-exempt status. So that preacher, see, a church, the reason why come a church has a tax-exempt status, it's simple. because they're supposed to provide services that people would otherwise look to the government for. That's why.
Okay.
That's the reason. So if you have been given that privilege by the government, then you're supposed to be carrying out those services so the people don't be running and getting on the phone writing letters to the government. The preacher, the church is supposed to provide.
Very interesting, sir. Very interesting. And guess what? Our time is about gone. perhaps we will, to some degree on this conversation, well, we have a little bit more time to do that Thursday. We've been talking on the topic, though, the nature of support. And I've been focusing on support in education, support in economic stability, and our theology. That's kind of how we got to the conversation about preachers and churches. My intent is not to slam or down anybody, but the reality is there's more, Pastor Waller, preachers could and should do in 2021 to help improve overall quality of life for everybody. Now, some people don't believe in preachers, so I guess they wouldn't go to them. But for those who do, you need to be ready. You know, you need to be ready. So let's do this. St. Louis, give me about 30 seconds, then we'll turn it over to Pastor Wallace to wrap us up for tonight.
Well, churches do like the synagogue. Don is an aspiring business person. Don, if he was Jewish and a member of the synagogue, you could go to the synagogue and borrow, and they would allow you 3 failures. After that 3rd failure, you're on your own. That's a church, a religious body, meeting the needs of their congregation so that they won't be running to the government.
Okay. Well, all right, all right. Well, appreciate that. Perhaps we'll pick this up Thursday. We'll extend on this.
Yeah.
It's something to
be safe.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Pastor, we're going to turn it over to you, sir. I know you're out there busy, but we're going to ask you if you could wrap us up for the evening.
Yeah, I just got off the road, Jerry, so I really appreciate you being able to just tune in.
Wow.
You know, as soon as I was able to do that. You know, the Word of God is a beautiful, beautiful thing to get in contact with. Keeping God first is always on the agenda now for me, and I just trust that for those who are listening and those who had a chance to talk will be able to know that he's still available, and he does things decently and in order. So I just want to say, whether it's 2 or 3 gathered together in his name, touching and agreeing, that he said he would be in the midst of us. When you got him in the midst, you got the right touch, because he said, oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that trusts in him. I yield back to you on that note, Pastor Doc. He's worthy to be trusted.
Absolutely,
yes,
absolutely. We hope that our Facebook live stream will be back. I'm not sure what's going on with Facebook, but it wouldn't allow us to stream tonight. Hopefully it'll be back with us Thursday. And we'll be back for another episode of Talk Straight this coming Thursday, 7 o'clock p.m. sharp, right here on Talk Straight. On behalf of our co-host, Pastor Ricky Waller, we thank you, and we look forward to